Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Relationship Pod. I'm your host, Sarah Boutros, and today I am joined by Shako Lockman, an executive communication coach who helps leaders build social confidence and grounded communication skills. Today, we're going to be talking about how to build authentic confidence, how to improve your presence and energy, and build on your communication skills. So if you are somebody who struggles with social anxiety or struggling to navigate conversations in social settings, this episode is for you. Welcome to the podcast, Shako.
Thank you, Sarah.
It's awesome Appreciate to have you here.
Great to be here.
You help leaders develop social confidence and grounded communication skills, right? It's part of the work that you do. Is this a skill that you've always mastered, or is it something that you've had to develop for yourself?
I developed it over time. Like, I literally went from being, I would call it a newbie, or somebody who was very socially anxious, socially awkward growing up, constantly overthinking, very low self-esteem as well. And I think that's where it started. It was from having low self-esteem growing up. And with low self-esteem, as you know, that translates and manifests into your communication skills. It showed up in any relationship I might develop. And I'm not talking just romantically, that as well, but in my social life, in my professional life, while I was at high school, even in university. So I'll tell you a little bit about the backstory of how it actually started. So I'm originally Kurdish and I grew up in Australia, but we immigrated. We were actually refugees in Australia from the Kurdish region of Iraq. So while we were growing up, we were constantly moving places, like going to apartment to apartment to apartment, and that meant changing schools all the time. So I think that also had to do with it a little bit, because I didn't stay in one place long enough to develop a social circle, to develop those skills necessary to integrate into a new group and feel confident introducing myself, being myself, etc. So by the time I was in high school, I was the awkward social butterfly. Not a social butterfly in a good way. What I mean by that is I would have different friends in different friend groups, but never really integrated into a particular group, simply because my relationship and connection with people never went to that depth. So that made me feel very lonely over time. I had a couple of close friends outside of school, but I rarely saw them as well, like maybe once every 2 months. By the time I was in university, the social anxiety was really there. And now I'm around really intelligent, really cool guys, pretty girls on campus. Meanwhile, I'm the one sitting there by myself following the cool kids around just in their shadows. While I was at university, I came across the whole world of personal development by accident. I read the 48 Laws of Power, and that was just a random book that I picked up.
Robert Greene.
Yeah, by Robert Greene, one of the best books on social dynamics and social intelligence. When I read that, it just blew my mind. Not simply, you see, that's energy right there, ladies and gentlemen. It's the aura.
Yeah, that's what happens. So powerful.
That's what happens when you improve your communication skills. You just radiate aura. The passion. When I realized, it wasn't just the information in the book, but it was the realization that, oh my God, there's information out there that teaches you how to be more confident. There's information that teaches you how to be magnetic, how to be socially aware and more charismatic, more articulate. I'm telling you, I was studying a major in evolutionary biology, which I was pretty interested in, but I was kind of there for my parents as well, to be honest. I was so obsessed with understanding human nature from that introduction by Robert Greene, where all I would read while I was at university were personal development books. I ended up reading Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, The Power of Now, etc., How to Win Friends and Influence People, of course. It got to the point where I was so obsessed with it, I couldn't even focus on the lecture. I was more focused on how the lecturer was presenting and how the social dynamics were in the classroom. That's what I was curious about now, not the vertebrae of some lizard.
Yeah, yeah.
I wasn't interested in that anymore. So I thought, what can I do? I went online and I was looking for a job, and I found a door-to-door sales job. And I thought, wow, that's a high-stress job. You're going to face a lot of rejection. And the way to succeed in a direct sales job like that is with your communication skills. So I went, I applied for the job, did the interview. They saw my passion. They hired me. They knew I was trainable, very coachable, which is a very important skill. And I killed it. I was in that career for about a year. I got promoted after a couple of weeks, literally a couple of weeks, because of how good of a student I was. Dropped out of uni. Parents loved that.
I can imagine.
Of course. And from there, I just started to feel way more confident because I was working on my self-esteem as I was improving my communication skills. They go hand in hand. From there, ended up getting headhunted in different careers, different industries as well, because they knew I was a good salesman. They knew I was a good communicator. I started posting some videos online, not like what I do now, but just more general self-help. And the last job that I had, I was headhunted to become an accounts manager in a compliance company in Sydney. During that job, I had a stable income. It was high income for Australian, based on the average Australian salary. It was secure and I felt confident. I started attracting opportunities and people into my life. And that's when I took a step back and thought, wow, I made a total transformation. My life looks completely different. I want to share this knowledge because I have the experience and the passion for it and I can teach it. So that's when I started Mindsley Status. So to answer your question, that's the backstory. It was not always a skill. It was something that I absolutely developed.
That's really inspiring. And I think for people watching, it's really important to know that you're not always just born with these skills. Some people think you're either born confident because of the circumstances that you grew up in, or you're just destined to be anxious and socially awkward for the rest of your life. So there's a lot of power in understanding that you can build this for yourself.
Exactly.
I'm curious to know, what did the social awkwardness look like for you back then? You said you struggled to develop deep relationships and you were kind of living in the shadows of people. In terms of how the behavior showed up for you, what did it look like?
It's a good question, and people can probably recognize this. Social awkwardness is a lack of social awareness. That's the first thing. For example, I'd be in a group and I would make a comment, which was at the very worst time I could make a comment. Or a joke, or ask a question, which was essentially a silly question. People say there's no such thing as a stupid question. I believe there are such things as stupid questions. In fact, the kind of questions that somebody asks in a social setting or even a professional setting shows their level of intelligence. That shows how your brain thinks. It's how your brain's working, right? What are you curious about? What are you trying to unpack? So it showed up as that, which was wrong comments or wrong questions at the wrong time. It would look like validation seeking. For example, I would make a joke, and the moment I would make the joke, my eyes would be darting around to see who caught the joke or who noticed it. And are they laughing? Because then that gives me permission to laugh and feel relaxed as well. So I was seeking validation externally. And I was trying to feel fulfilled and feel validated based on a lot of external things. For example, I believe as a man, you should be well-groomed. I believe that to this day. You should look nice, smell nice, sure. But I was vain. The moment a man becomes vain about his appearance, then he's tapping more into his feminine side to the point where it becomes very unbalanced. And so the way that I would dress, for example, I would look in the mirror more than my mom would. And she loves to take care of herself. And when I would go out constantly at social events, I'd go to the bathroom just to make sure that my hair was right before, when I grew my hair out, make sure my hair was right and the color and everything, because I thought that's what's going to get attraction. And I would even post certain things on my Instagram story, for example, that I thought people would think is cool, rather than posting it just because I thought it was cool. So it was a lot of lack of social awareness and seeking that external validation. And another thing that shows what that social awkwardness looks like was also just my reactivity. For example, if somebody would, let's say we're having a conversation, there's two of us and there's somebody else sitting here, or a group, let's say there's four or five people. If somebody made a comment and I didn't actually agree with it, but they were confident and charming, I would start nodding along and smiling and agreeing without even thinking about it. So I was very reactive to my environment rather than being grounded.
Yeah.
Plus the overthinking, which
Yeah.
meddles it all.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you. And one of the things that you mentioned was about this external validation and basing everything that you say and do to try and get the approval of other people. How did you start to build that connection with yourself so that you could be grounded in who you were and start showing up for you rather than for them?
Such a great question because that's so important,
Yeah.
especially in your line of
Yeah.
work, right?
Yeah.
Because then you're not putting pressure on people externally
Yeah.
or on anything in order to feel validated. It was a few ways. Earlier in my journey, and to this day, it was focusing and working very consciously and proactively on my self-esteem. Self-esteem, there's a science behind self-esteem. Have you read The Six Pillars of Self-Esteem?
I actually haven't.
By Nathaniel Brandon. I would strongly recommend that book. It is the best book on confidence that I've ever read. Yeah, I think he's a psychologist as well. So I started working on my self-esteem, and something that Nathaniel Brandon says, for example, one of the pillars is self-acceptance. So I would look at different methods of improving your confidence. For example, stepping out of your comfort zone.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that's a buzzword, step out of your comfort zone. But let me ask you, how often do people actually do that?
People with low self-worth, not very often at all.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
would say the majority of the public actually don't do it. Probably
Really?
not. Yeah, I would say 99% of people don't consciously step out of their comfort zone. They say they do, but do they really? Like, for example, do they put themselves in situations where they know they're going to be uncomfortable? And I'm not just talking about taking a cold shower. I'm talking about something socially, speaking to a stranger, asking a girl that you like out on a date,
Yeah.
or standing up to your boss, standing up to your parents, things that feel very scary. So that's what I started to do. I started to approach strangers, start conversations, go out before, when I used to go clubbing and things, I don't do that anymore. But back in the days, I'd go out by myself and just start conversations with people. And you know what I would do? I'll take a little notebook, keep it in my pocket. And later at the end of the night, like on the train on the way back home, I would write down like a field report. Basically, what happened? What did I do well? What didn't I do? What didn't I do well? What did I do well? And what could be improved? Just really breaking it down. I was a student of social dynamics, and I still am to this day. Just an absolute student, objectively looking at it as if I'm a scientist watching animals behave socially, not being emotionally attached to it. And that goes to the second point. This happened in 20, I would say 2020. No, 2021. In 2021, when I started to really put myself out there because I worked on my confidence, I was exposed to parts of my shadow or my subconscious mind that I didn't even know was there. For example, fear of abandonment, fear of not being good enough, fear of rejection. And I noticed it would come up in romantic relationships. So when that came up for me, and I just started my business as well, this coaching business, that's when I went deep into the area of self-acceptance and surrender. And I was introduced to that by David Hawkins, who wrote Letting Go. I practiced the Letting Go method, which is basically if you have any strong negative emotion or fear or anxiety that maybe you've been holding on to, this is what the process looks like very practically. So this will be good for your listeners as well. You sit down somewhere private. You take a deep breath. Maybe you think of the thing that triggers you or the fear that you have. For example, fear of rejection, whatever it is. And then you meditate for a second. You just focus on your breath. You stay still and you focus all your attention on that emotion without trying to change it. That's the key. Without trying to change it. So I swear to God, Sarah, for months I was sitting in my apartment by myself on the floor, just feeling these emotions. And I don't cry often, but during that period, I was crying for like months, nonstop. And I asked my friend who's a therapist, what's happening to me? Like, this is so unlike me. It feels very emotional, feels very violent. It's very uncomfortable. And he said to me, Ed Neeson, one of my mentors, He said, Shaka, you're facing your dragon. You're facing your demons. You need to keep feeling it. He said, yeah, it's a violent process, but you need to remain steadfast without running away from it. And that's what I did. I trusted it. And you know what happened? As I kept feeling it, at the end of every letting go meditation session, I felt lighter. I felt so much clearer and better.
Mm-hmm.
Over time, those emotions that I was tapping into, I couldn't feel them.
Yeah.
Over time, they didn't run away. They simply ran their course. Because people think emotions are infinite. They're not. Emotions are finite. They have a lifespan. The reason why people feel them for years, maybe, or longer than they should, is because resistance perpetuates those feelings. So it just keeps it alive.
Yeah.
So I felt it and I transmuted it. And that has been one of the biggest factors in developing my self-esteem, because then I felt that, what is that? That's self-acceptance.
Yeah.
If you can allow yourself to feel trauma or anxiety or deep, deep fears, you are now accepting yourself more than anybody could do for you. Even if you have an unconditionally loving partner, they can't feel what you're feeling. So if you can accept yourself, what happened then is my empathy to other people grew, my sensitivity towards other people grew, which I had to be careful about as well, because that's a...
Needs boundaries too.
Exactly.
Mm.
But it made me more whole.
Yeah. There's so much gold in everything that you just said. And two of the biggest key themes that I've seen in your journey that have helped you, which where I see in my clients, they get stuck, is that you approached it from a place of curiosity and learning and non-judgmental, creating non-judgmental space for yourself. What exactly. I've seen is that people, when they start this personal development journey, they get attached to the outcome and they want to get to a specific place. And on some level, you need to know where you're going. You need to want to get there. Otherwise, you don't put in the work. But it can almost become this other avenue of continuing to judge themselves and wanting themselves to get it right, that they don't even allow themselves to go through the process of learning through failure, learning through rejection, learning through just trying and trying and trying. And then on the other hand, it's the feeling, allowing yourself to feel that trauma and that pain without running from it.
Exactly.
Without even having the intention of fixing it.
Yes.
That's what's really fucking powerful about what you said and what I just wanted to reiterate for people to understand, because that is where the healing begins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I completely agree. It's just embracing yourself fully, giving yourself that safe space to feel what you need to feel.
Mm.
That way, your partner, your family members, your friends, your colleagues, they don't have to deal with your shit.
Mm.
That way, you're the one taking full ownership. That's confidence.
Yeah.
That's self-responsibility, which is another pillar of self-esteem, self-responsibility.
Mm.
When you can take full responsibility for your emotions, for your triggers, it just makes the world a better place.
Yeah. Totally agree. And I like that you touched on how it impacted your relationships as well. What would you say has shifted the most since you started this journey on yourself, specifically in terms of your marriage?
I would say self-awareness, which is the most important skill anybody can learn, because it doesn't matter how much you're seeking those emotions or how much you're stepping out of your comfort zone. If you don't know where you need work, if you don't know where your triggers are, you're just shooting in the dark, basically. Yeah. So self-awareness has been a huge impact. And also, I would say just the emotional intelligence going up. Because when you can accept yourself and give yourself that space, that gives you the capacity to do it for other people as well.
Mm.
Very often, and I'm not saying this to brag, as a communication coach, it's kind of obvious, but very often do people tell me, Shaka, you're such a great listener. Or, I feel really heard when you talk. And all I do is listen. It's not magic.
Mm.
What I don't do, if I try to do this in my marriage as well, I'm not perfect, but what I don't do is listen with an expectation of what I'm going to hear, or listen with an agenda, or listen thinking about what I'm going to say next as well. So giving myself that space allows me to listen to somebody, listen to my wife, and see what's actually going on internally.
Yeah.
And give that space. Because she ends up feeling safe when she can feel that I'm there present listening. So it had a huge impact on the marriage.
I think that's one of the most important skills that you can have in any relationship, is the ability to make somebody feel seen and heard. That is ultimately what creates the safety. When you're working with your clients, do the same principles apply? Because I think when you work with executives, right? So the dynamics in general are quite different, but there's still relationships that you have to nurture and build. So do the same principles apply to what you've just spoken about? And is there anything necessarily different when you're navigating the workplace versus your relationship?
It's a very good question. Mm. You're asking amazing questions, Sarah.
Thank you.
Good on you. I like it. You've done your research. So they are different because in the workplace, you do have to be more strategic.
Mm.
People aren't going to like hearing this, but you do have to be slightly Machiavellian. You have to be very aware because there are people out to get you. I'm not saying that to make people paranoid, but when you're in the workplace, you're not choosing who you want to work with. You don't choose who the employees are. Mm. You can choose your employer, and you should. You should be very careful of who employs you. But there's people who you need to be careful of. However, the underlying principles of communication are the same. They're essentially universal principles. Are you spiritual?
Yes.
Okay, so you would agree that no matter what area of life we're talking about, there are universal principles that dictate whether something is going to be in flow or in constriction, right?
Yeah.
For example, surrender. For example, presence. For example, acceptance. When you apply surrender, presence, and acceptance to any area of life, things are going to flow. Whether you're trying to make money, whether you're trying to have a better marriage, or you're trying to improve your business, or even if you're painting, if you're applying these universal principles, things will flow. At least you'll be going in the direction of flow. You'll be operating at a higher frequency. Mm. What I love about this question is the fact that it points out the difference between my content and what's inside my program, what I talk about with my clients, because clients are so surprised when they actually join our mentorship, because what they don't expect is how deep the conversations go. On my Instagram, I will admit openly, I talk about practical solutions to social dynamics and different scenarios, because I know, first of all, that's what people want to see on social media. They want something practical. And I know that it actually engages the right people as well. But that's just a Band-Aid. If you're watching my content, for example, or even your content, and they're applying these little principles without doing the inner work, good luck. It's not going to last long. When we talk about an executive's transformation with being assertive, for example, the question is not what do you need to do to be assertive? The question is, why aren't you assertive? That's the question.
It's powerful, yeah.
Yeah. Why aren't you confident speaking in a meeting? Not here's how to speak confidently in the meeting. It's like, what's stopping you anyway? Oh, and this is what I hear all the time. I'm afraid of what they're going to think. I'm afraid of judgment. I'm afraid of rejection. Wow, there you go.
Mm.
If we fix that, and often we do that in the first week because we focus on presence and energy in the first week. Once we fix that, everything else becomes easy. Everything else just flows. It falls into place.
Yeah.
You know how sometimes you meet people who seem like they're naturally very charismatic, and maybe they are. They are actually naturally. They came from a very good family, very good upbringing. I mean, I did as well, but there are certain elements that nurtured their confidence, socially speaking. They are natural, but they're not thinking about the technicalities of social dynamics. It's their self-esteem that makes them charismatic. It's their self-acceptance and their self-love that manifests in great social skills, which is why that's the root cause of all social dynamics, whether you're talking about a marriage or an executive in a meeting.
Yeah, so true. So true. And you mentioned that the first layer is the presence and the energy, right?
Yep.
Would you say that self-worth is the foundation of that? Or is there more?
What do you mean by self-worth?
So you mentioned like the self-love that you have.
Mm-hmm.
It's people who are naturally charismatic is because they have that self-acceptance, that self-love.
Mm.
And then you mentioned that when you're working with your clients, the first layer is presence and energy. So I'm wondering, does the self-love fall under presence and energy? Or is presence and energy something that you focus on before you get to the self-love?
Interesting.
Or is that just all?
So I rarely use the words self-love. I used it now, and I avoid it simply because sometimes it can sound a little bit fluffy. But if we were to define self-love, and let me know if this is synonymous with your definition of self-worth, it's simply self-acceptance.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yes, 100%. 100%.
Okay, great.
Yeah, for me, I explain it in three different layers.
Mm.
There's celebrating the good in who you are, befriending the shadows, and healing the inner child.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Is that your process?
That's my process.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That is so valuable.
Yeah.
Well, maybe you can do a session for my clients.
Yeah, I would love to.
For my group. Yeah. That'd be amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's super valuable. Mm. So to answer your question, yes, it is encompassing, because presence and energy is, well, let's break it down and define it first. Mm. Very important. Presence is simply how present to the moment you are.
Mm.
How grounded are you to the moment right now? Are you thinking about what to say next? Or are you looking at me? Are you actually paying full attention? Which I can tell you are. Mm. You are very present.
Mm.
And then you have energy. Energy is a very vague term, which is why it's important to define. Energy is simply your emotional state that you carry that people will feel.
Mm.
We've all met somebody and the energy feels a bit off. Even if they seem nice and they're smiling, they're doing all the right things, but I don't know, the vibe's a bit off with that guy.
Mm.
A bit of a weirdo. I don't know why. I don't know why, but there's something, there's an alarm bell triggering
it. You can feel
internally.
It.
You can feel it. Mm. There's also some people where you feel, maybe they don't even talk that much, but you say, man, she had such a great energy. Or he had such a great energy. Mm. I really like that guy. I love his vibe. That's because of their emotional state. In order to have an optimal emotional state, which radiates a sense of lightness, ease, playfulness, spontaneity, that is achieved with presence. Because when you're deeply present to the moment, you can only be present when you accept the present moment. When you accept the present moment. And when you accept the present moment, that means you're accepting your own emotions. You're accepting how you feel. And if you do that deeply enough, what better definition of self-love or self-acceptance?
Yeah.
Right?
And how grounded can you feel when you're not stuck up here overthinking? I totally hear you on that. I'm curious to pick your brain about something, because I've worked with a public speaking coach. Nice. And I can imagine that there may be like parallels in the teachings. But what I learned with her in terms of energy is more like projecting more of yourself, for example, or playing around with different personas depending on the context of the situation that you're in or the message that you're delivering. For me, when I was in that process, I'll be honest, something about it didn't feel very authentic to me, thinking about applying a different persona to a message. But I'm wondering if this is something that you also do with your clients, or whether you have a different approach.
This is turning into one of the best podcasts.
Really?
I swear to God. You're asking such great questions. All right. I'm about to call out the industry right now.
Yeah.
You ready for this?
I'm ready.
There are communication coaches out there who I have utmost respect for. You can respect somebody while disagreeing with them.
Yeah.
But I absolutely disagree with their process. For example, I've seen so many reels come up on my feed of communication coaches talking like this. So if you want to be more charismatic, here's what you need to do. Communicate like this and do that and do this. And I'm looking and I'm like, show me the real you, brother.
Yeah.
Even some women, it's like, I want to see the real you. It's like, sure, that looks a bit engaging, but you're talking like a cartoon character. People don't talk like that in real life. Even when they're public speaking, they look like a performer. Yeah. If you want to be a performer, fair enough. Be my guest. Go to Broadway. But if not, if you want to feel free, which is something that deeply resonates with a lot of people who want to work with us, I would say, especially with me.
Mm.
They say, I want to feel free to be myself. My approach is, let's say you're public speaking or you're just wanting to be more charismatic. Because to be a good public speaker, you have to be charismatic anyway. I don't teach my clients to step into a certain persona and put on an act. What I tell them is you can switch on your charisma with the instruments of your body, meaning your voice, your facial expressions, your hand gestures, and your body language.
Mm.
I'm not acting like somebody that I'm not, even though right now I have a bit higher energy than I normally do, right? I mean, we've met before. I'm a bit more low-key, right?
Yeah.
When we first met, I'm like more more quiet.
More of a social setting than,
Yeah, exactly. And we met at it was a business mastermind / networking event.
Yeah.
I didn't talk to many people that day because I'm actually, I don't know if you know this, but I'm more of an introvert.
Mm.
So what I teach my clients is even if you're an introvert, doesn't matter whether you're an introvert, extrovert, ambivert, you can communicate charismatically as yourself. All you need to do is switch on 10% more energy than you normally have if you want to be engaging. Sometimes you don't, sit back, relax, don't talk as much, ask questions. But even if you are low key, hold good eye contact, have good body language. And when you do speak up, speak clearly.
Yeah.
Even if you're not doing a much. But if you do want to be a good presenter, public speaking, maybe hold an audience, even in just a group setting at a social event. In that situation, be engaging with the group, with your body language, with your voice, with your eye contact as well. Give a bit of that energy out. That doesn't mean being somebody else. It means amplifying who you are. Just turning up the volume a little bit.
Yeah.
And that's it.
I love that. And how do you advise people to turn up the volume? So is it just in the way that you move and like what you were saying with the body language, or is it more than that?
Yeah, so it would be in literally turning up the volume in your voice.
Okay.
So speaking a little bit louder, using your facial expressions and using gestures and open body language as well. If you just open your chest up a little bit and speak like this, let's take an example. Imagine we're in a group. And I want to make a point about why communication skills are extremely important. And I say communication skills are very important because everybody uses them, no matter who you're talking to. And that's why it's a really important skill. You understand me. I articulated fairly clearly, but it's a little bit boring as well. But instead, if I say, here's why communication skills are extremely important, because no matter who you're talking to, you're going to be communicating. So you're going to have an impact on people, whether you like it or not, which is why everybody needs to develop communication skills, right?
Yeah.
See, even you physiologically react to that energy. You started nodding and smiling as I was talking because that's called the law of state transference. People don't think about the other person when they communicate. They're so selfish. Everybody, not everybody, most people just think about themselves and how am I being perceived.
Mm.
When communication is about the other people. It's not about you, which is why I do believe that it's actually selfish if you're in a group setting or if you're public speaking and you have very low energy when you should notch it up. So that would be the difference.
Wow. Yeah. That's so interesting. And how do these apply as well to the people that you work with? Because public speaking, and that is one thing, but in the context of a work environment, is it the same that you expect, not expect, but that you advise people to turn up the energy, focus on their body language? Or is there something else that's missing in everything that we've spoken about that you think would be really helpful for people who are trying to figure out how to navigate specifically, let's say, difficult conversations in the workplace?
I would say in the workplace, especially when it comes to executives and anybody aiming to portray an executive presence, to communicate with high status communication, my approach is having grounded communication skills, meaning you don't have to turn up the energy that much unless you're in a group or unless you're presenting, but focus on being grounded, which goes back to being present, and very, very importantly, being non-reactive. For example, when that plant fell, I can react a few different ways. Either I can say, oh, should we pause it? Should we fix it?
Yeah.
Which is what most people would probably do.
Awkward, yeah.
Yeah. Or I can laugh at it, make a joke about it, and add to the vibe, add to the energy. And what does that display as well? It displays that one is comfortable with themselves. They can laugh at themselves. They don't take themselves. I mean, they have a dignified presence, but at the same time, they don't take themselves too seriously.
Mm.
It's a bit of a paradox. There's two sides to the coin. You want to hold yourself with a dignified presence, but at the same time, not taking yourself seriously means not judging yourself and being harsh on yourself, not aiming for perfection. That's another thing that I advise my executive clients, for example. It's speak up, but don't expect to be perfect. If you're in a group setting, for example, and you feel nervous, it's okay. say to yourself, it's okay. Imagine that was your son or daughter and they said, daddy, mommy, I feel nervous.
Yeah.
What would you say to your child?
Yeah.
What would you say?
You open your arms. Come here. It's okay. You're going to be all right. Yeah. You got this. Yeah.
Yeah, it's fine.
Mm.
And even if they stumble, you'll say, it's okay, baby. Like, you did great.
Mm.
Next time you'll do better. If we have that level of compassion to children, and this ties in with what you do as well with the inner child healing, why don't we have that compassion with ourselves?
Yeah.
So even with my executive, CEO, entrepreneurial, multi-million dollar clients, I tell them as well, just accept yourself. It's okay.
Yeah.
That's really what it comes down to.
Mm. Yeah. The thing that you mentioned about the, what would you say to a child? It's just a really powerful frame to have in your own mind when it comes to dealing with the nervousness. And generally speaking, it's the triggers that come as a result of your trauma, right? If you trace back where they all come from, it's usually from that younger version of yourself that felt like they were in a really vulnerable position and didn't know how to soothe their way out of it. And this is where the inner child kind of healing comes in with the work that I do with my clients on self-worth. It's like, how do you create a relationship with that part of yourself and give yourself what you always needed when you didn't have it at the time? And it's such an amazing building block.
How do you do that?
Literally by creating the dialogue with that part of yourself. So you refer to it as a shadow. I refer to it as an inner child. When the nervousness or the fear comes up, instead of panicking and resisting and wanting to be reactive to it, you just open yourself up to it and you recognize it for what it is, which is that younger part of yourself. And once you understand that it is just a scared little child, you create that dialogue. You sit with it, you soothe it, you say, it's okay, you're going to be fine. What is it that you need right now to feel safe? And then you give that to yourself. That's a process called reparenting.
Mm,
yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, and it's really, really effective. I think that one of the biggest and most unfortunate struggles is that the people who have been through the most in life and have these traumas and things that come up for them, their behaviors and the way that they show up in the world are usually almost like frowned upon by society, right? Like, you know this, when you hear people say like, be more extroverted or overthink less. And so people start to develop so much shame. They're like, oh, I'm not good as I am. I'm too weak. I'm too this. I'm too that. And that shame is a massive block to the presence, to the self-confidence and everything. So I think that you're doing really amazing work. And
thank you.
I didn't realize the depth of the work that you do as well until we got onto this podcast. I thought it was going to be a bunch of practical tips. And don't get me wrong, your practical advice is also amazing. But
it's secondary.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this is such a valuable conversation and amazing work that you're doing.
Thank you so
truly.
Much.
Yeah,
I appreciate
No worries. What would you say are the three biggest mistakes that people make when they're starting this journey, and how would you advise them to overcome them?
This journey of improving their communication skills. The first one is trying to do it by themselves. I did that for about 6 years and I saw growth, but it just took 6 years. It wasn't until I hired a mentor, like an actual coach, but also found a mentor in real life that I could learn from and shadow and seek feedback from. That is the quickest way to grow. So when people try to do it by themselves, you can only go so far because you don't know your blind spots and you don't know what you don't know, which is why even to this day, as myself, I have my own mentors because, I can try to keep doing things on my own and I will get results, but it'll take way longer. Why find a result in a year or 2 years when I can do it in 3 months with somebody that has literally gone through the steps themselves? So that's the first mistake. The second mistake is something we've alluded to already, which is focusing too much on the outer world rather than the inner world. True transformation happens internally. I don't care how cliche that sounds. It's the truth. Your outer world, if you notice that you're not assertive enough, you people please, you struggle with asserting yourself with boundaries, let's say, that is an outer reflection of your inner world, your inner state.
Mm.
So a mistake people make is not sitting down and journaling, what are my beliefs? What do I believe to be true? Because those inner beliefs are creating more manifestations of that reality.
Yeah.
So it's literally just a reflection. And your outer world has no choice but to give you what you expect to be true. So that's the second mistake. And the third mistake is people simply believing that the world and people around them are judging them way more than they actually are. In fact, ironically, when somebody is afraid of judgment from others, they are judging those people by thinking that.
Themselves.
Yeah, but think about it. If I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, oh, she's judging me, that means I am assuming that you're a judgmental person.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
You're assuming that people are judging you, meaning you're assuming that they're judgmental. Ask yourself the question, is that person a judgmental person? Very unlikely they are. And if you truly believe that this person in front of you is judgmental, that's now social intelligence, meaning information. Now you know to be a bit more reserved because you know that they're probably judging you. But 99% of the time, you're probably wrong about that.
Yeah.
99% of the time, that's not going to happen. People are so focused on themselves, as I said, they're not thinking about judging you.
Yeah.
So that's the third mistake. It's just, it's these assumptions that people have.
It's all projection, isn't it?
Exactly. Mm. It's literally a projection.
Yeah.
If I go out, as an example, if you go into a social event or a networking event and your belief, your internal assumption is it's hard to meet people, people are closed, and people are judgmental, what do you think you're going to see?
Exactly what you're looking for.
Exactly. The RAS, which is a reticular activation system in the brain, is responsible. It's a neurofunction. It's responsible for finding evidence for what you believe to be true, which is why if you're interested in buying a yellow Porsche, when you go out onto the street, you're going to start seeing yellow Porsches. This always happens when people want to buy a new car. They start seeing that car everywhere. It's not because they magically manifested. They were always there. But now your RAS, your brain, is finding evidence for that. So if you assume it's hard to meet people, people are closed, people are judgmental, it's hard to find a good woman or a good man these days, you're going to keep seeing evidence for that, which is a big mistake. You're getting in your own way.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so true. And when you work on that with your clients, is it as simple as just kind of showing them a mirror to that belief system and seeing that it naturally drops? Or do you have a process that you recommend people go through to start changing the way that they think about things?
Yeah, you're spot on actually with the first part, which is I basically hold up a mirror and say, so you believe that these people are judgmental?
Yeah.
They say, yeah. I'm like, are you 100% sure about that? Like genuinely, are you 100% sure about that? Do you have evidence?
Mm.
And they say, well, can't be 100% sure. I'm like, okay, well, what else could it mean then? Maybe I'm just assuming. Interesting. That's the first part. It's just holding the mirror up. The second part is, okay, now rewrite your beliefs.
Yeah.
Is it not a beautiful life hack that we have a brain which is self-aware, that we can actually choose what to believe?
Mm.
There's a reason why millionaires and billionaires who go bankrupt become millionaires and billionaires again.
Why is that?
It's because they believe that they can do it.
Mm.
So when they go back to ground zero, and they're in the same position as somebody who's never been a millionaire before.
Yeah.
The reason why they can do it again and person B won't or can't do it is simply because person A, who already did it, has the beliefs that I can do it.
Yeah.
And I have the ability to do it.
Mm.
So they don't need, very often, here's another mistake actually, I'll give you a bonus one. People think they need more knowledge.
Yeah.
When people join my coaching, it might be the same with you. I tell them, it's like, look, we have this library of practical advice that you can apply in any social setting, but that's 10% of the work we do. 90% of the work is going to be conversations about your beliefs. And that's going to impact everything else.
100%. Yeah. It shows the power of working with someone.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't have anyone who's showing you that mirror,
you're just going to keep reading.
Like you rightfully said, you don't have anyone to show you your blind spots as well.
Yeah.
And it alludes to what you were saying towards the beginning of the conversation, which is when you started seeing all of your stuff come up as soon as you started entering the relationships, and that's when you started healing your trauma. So there's a lot of power in having somebody there for you to show you the things that you don't see.
It's a gift.
Yeah.
When we get triggered in a relationship, it's a gift. It's showing you where you need work.
Mm.
Why ignore that? Why limit yourself?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And we've covered, like, I think quite a lot of ground in this conversation. It's been absolutely incredible. But if you were to kind of summarize everything with one massive key takeaway for people to literally start actioning today to help them build more social confidence and grounded communication, what would it be?
Let me flip it on you. What's your biggest takeaway?
My biggest takeaway is that your relationship with yourself sets the foundation, and that your presence and your energy is what helps everything else fall into place.
Yeah,
that's my biggest takeaway.
I like that.
Yeah.
If the listeners are going to take one thing away from this conversation, it's the fact that your outer reality, you can't blame anybody on it. It is simply, ultimately, a reflection of your subconscious beliefs and assumptions. That's where you need to focus your attention.
It's powerful. Mm. Yeah. Amazing. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
I've really enjoyed this conversation. It's one of my favorite podcasts that I've recorded so far. Don't awesome. Tell my other guests.
Amazing. I'm glad to hear it.
Where can people find you if they want to learn more about the work that you're doing?
Sure. So Instagram, Sharko T. Lockman, or YouTube, Sharko Lockman.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for today.
If you guys enjoyed this episode, I would love to know what your biggest takeaway was. Please leave it in the comments. And if you know anyone who is trying to develop their executive presence or build social confidence that you think would benefit from this conversation, please feel free to share it with them. We will see you in the next episode.